Because we like to keep our lights on, now a word from our sponsor. Founded in 2011 and headquartered in New York City, SongTrust maintains the most extensive, accessible publishing network in the industry, with a global network of direct society collections with 45-plus performance, mechanical, and digital societies globally covering 120-plus territories. SongTrust is owned and operated by Downtown Music Holdings. And now, friends, I have a deal for you. Visit songtrust.com/pubcast and take advantage of their 20% discount off the one-time registration just for listening to the AIMP Nashville Pubcast. And now let's get on with our episode. Hey friends, on this episode of the AIMP Nashville Pubcast, we have Senior Director A&R at Spirit Music, Derek Wells. If you've listened to any country music in the past 5 years, more than likely you've heard his deluxe guitar work. But on this episode, you get to know him as a champion of songwriters. Welcome back, listeners. I am over the top today to be sitting with my good friend and amazingly talented friend, Derek Wells, today. And as before we started rolling tape, I was telling him, I said, I hadn't really sat down and wrote and written down all his accolades before. And I said, get ready, man. Your ego's going to get big, even though I know he doesn't have one. He's very humble. But I started looking up your stuff, dude. Like 2016, I do remember that you were the youngest person to win an ACM for Guitar Player of the Year that year, which was crazy. And also, wasn't it the same year you were nominated for CMA? Youngest person on that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How old were you then?
Well, I was still pretty, I would have been like almost 33, something like that. So, I mean, not a baby, I don't think, but it was, I guess uncommon that you get in those lists that early even.
Yeah, it was just, because we met originally, like you were doing a musician, and as you've stated before on some things, you started off kind of in the live field, but then once you hit the studio scene, like you were the guy for all the demos. But then that transition, everybody likes to think it's an overnight town, but you probably started doing demos in like early 2000s, like 2006, 7, 8, somewhere in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, like my, it's funny when people ask that question. There's almost two qualifications, because you definitely come up through what I call session ghetto, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, when people say, well, when did you start doing sessions? It's like, well, man, I mean, I was recording, you know, guitars in some dude's house by Opryland in, you know, whatever year, but I don't really necessarily call that playing sessions, you know? I mentioned this earlier to you before we started talking, but my first actual like publishing company demo session was like 2009 for Megan James when she was at EMI at Station West Studio. And I can still tell you the engineer and I can tell you every player that was there and the engineer that worked there, and I still see most of those guys to this day.
That is a mighty good memory. So I like to point that out, because as I mentioned these years, because again, 2016 is when you won your first ACM, youngest person, nominated for CMA. I remember that it was a great year. Mm-hmm. And then this year you won your second ACM, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you were nominated for a Grammy, and I believe that was Maren Morris's Hero record, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then I think it was 2018, you were also a Music Row All-Star Musician Award. And then, I mean, if you listen at all to current country radio, you have heard this man's tasty licks, guitar solos on pretty much every artist known to man. I couldn't even write a list out. It was so long.
I would say if they like it, it's me. If they don't, it definitely wasn't me.
And then in the last couple years, and I don't know the years that you started, but then you started transitioning into the role of producer. You went from live guy, studio guy, then moved on to producer. You worked with people such as Granger Smith, Maddie and Tay. You produced or co-produced Scotty McCreery's number one single, This Is It, which I believe has gone platinum now, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And not only all that, I don't know where you find extra time. You also sit on boards for the CMAs, and you're on committees for ACMs and the Grammys.
Yeah.
And why I brought you in today is you've officially transitioned to a publisher, an A&R, which is also just amazing. You recently joined over at Spirit as the senior director of A&R.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the first question is, where do you find time to do any of this?
Someone asked me the other day, one of the people I work with, is like, how do you get all that done? And I said, barely. That's the answer.
Thank you. lot of people have interesting definitions of the word producer and what that entails.
Right.
So
yeah.
As a guy that's transitioned, how do you define that role and really see that role? Because there's a lot of aspects to that.
There are a lot. And the simple answer is just that, truthfully, it's different for every project. Because every project, and then specifically every artist, and then if you broaden the scope, the artist and their team, they have different needs, right? You know, and so some artists are very, very, very hands-on. They're very, very good with direction. They're very, very good at maybe kind of speaking the lingo. Maybe they come from a musical background, or a musician background. Or maybe they come from an engineering background. You know, nowadays, there's some young artists that are really amazing kind of producers themselves in terms of building tracks and doing that kind of stuff. So, it ranges, I always like to say this, that there's basically a menu that the producer can offer, and then it really is kind of a la carte, you know? And the obvious ones are, budgeting, working out timelines, being in contact with a label about when things are due, that kind of stuff, getting the right team in place, hiring a proper band. If you're thinking about a specific mix engineer, specific editing team, all that kind of stuff, if background vocalists are part, so on the front end, it's a lot of casting. And then from an A&R perspective, some artists and teams, you're a little bit more involved in that, act like Scotty McCreary. Thankfully, he really listens to me and Frank and Aaron about song selection. We get to sit down and talk about that kind of stuff. And then there's other projects. They go, hey, here's the songs. This is what you're cutting, And then same thing, man. Some artists are there really engaged. They want to be there for every part and every overdub. Some people like to just be there for the tracking. And then they go, well, yeah, man, kind of do your thing and let me know when you're ready for it. And then some artists are very hand. They go, hey, man, I'm an entertainer. I'm a storyteller. This is not my world. Do your thing. I trust you. And so there's just a myriad of things, from that menu that they can all kind of choose a la carte. And then sometimes they go, man, just do it all. Take the chef's tasting. Give me all of it, They go, okay, cool. I'll do that. So, but the bottom line for me as a producer, it really, I would say 80% of it is just, you're the guy that's got to get it across the finish line. You got to solve the problems. You got to get the people there. You got to make sure the deadlines are there. And bottom line for me, the best producers that I know and the ones that I love and respect the most, they're just finishers. They're not just idea guys. They're not just, throwing things out in the room all the time, they're not just, completely just a song guy or just this. It's like they're finishers. They get it done. And that's what you're there to do.
That's what I advise. I think as our market has transitioned, and we get into this a little too, is that, it used to just be standard. The writers wrote songs. You typically took them in the studio. The studio musicians would build them out, and there you have your track. But as you mentioned, we have more and more in the box, a lot of track writer producers.
Completely.
And so there's a whole new field, and those guys are moving in. I work with a lot of those guys now, and I always try to educate them because I think most of them would like to move forward into the production realm.
Yeah.
And I tell them, I said, there's a lot involved there that you need to understand. And it's relationships, as you mentioned, because you do have to dance around labels and
management,
creative talents.
The whole thing, yeah.
And then the budgeting. I try to teach them early on, like, you have to come in on time. You have to come in on budget. Mm-hmm. You have to know what that budget is. And there's just a whole lot involved.
That's right.
And to grow to me and be a fully well-rounded producer, if that's your goal, to be a producer and do a lot of acts out there.
Yeah. And that's where I just feel like I've been, I guess lucky is the word. I feel like there should be a bigger version of it in this instance. But, getting to be around as a musician, all the producers and also A&R staff and also production assistants. There's three or four people in this town that really help these producers on that side that are game changers. And I feel really lucky that I've kind of gotten to take my favorite aspects of how all these guys work and go, oh man, I really like the way so-and-so does this on these sessions. And that's a really good thing. But I really liked the way this guy built this into the budget because then that backs him up in case he needs to do this and that kind of stuff. And I feel really, really fortunate that the vantage point that I've had, that I've kind of been able to glean some of my favorite pieces of all those guys' process.
again, keep paying attention, learning. You learned all this through the process of being a student of the art of what we do, which is amazing. Now, we're going to take the next jump because, again, as we mentioned recently, you have slid into publishing, which is a whole new bag of crazy, as you're probably learning out quickly.
Yeah.
So, first off, what inspired you or led you to even, was this something that you had thought about, or did this opportunity come to you, or combo?
$1 million question, and it is a little bit of both. For the last, I'd say maybe starting about 5 years ago, I started to kind of get this thing in the back of my brain of just go, man, I love songwriters. You kind of know some of the circles I run in personally. Like, my best friends are songwriters. All my running buddies are songwriters, you know? And I'm just such a song guy anyway. Like, even as a guitar player, like, I never geeked out over like instrumental music or guitar geek stuff. Like, I liked playing songs, but I'm also not a writer myself. I don't feel like that's my gift, you know? And, as the kind of dream of producer started to happen, it'd be like, man, it'd be awesome to have a clear path of like being able to sign some writers that I just believe in, that I think are great. And then, maybe I can get their songs on records that I'm producing if that worked out right, or get artists, but it's a little bit of a pipe dream, but I just kind of thought, man, that would be really great someday. Well, enter Frank Rogers, my friend and mentor, and he's just been a dear, Frank put me on my first master record when he hired me for Scotty Mercury, in like 2012. And, he and I, and even his whole family, I mean, like, he's kind of a big brother to me, and he and his wife Jess have just been great to me, and we bonded on a level pretty quickly outside of work. And, Frank called me, the beginning of this year and said, hey, come by the house, I want to talk to you about something. And that's just not like him, And he kind of started to spell out a little bit of a transition that was going to be happening at Spirit Music. And the conversation started as, well, man, I just love you, and I'd love to find a way to work together in a more official way. I don't know if that's something you'd be interested in, and I don't know what it would look like at all, but I just want to start the dialogue. And, of course, my response was, well, man, Frank, any way I could work more closely with you, I'm a fan of. I love you and respect you and count me in. And he was like, well, a lot's up in the air. I still don't even really know, for sure my own role in this, but let's just start talking about it. And that's what we did. And we just kind of started, I started going over there on the weekends, and we would just sit with notepads and kind of dream. Well, what was, first day he said, what's Derek Wells' dream job? And I just laughed at it. I said, Frank, I don't know, man. Who gets asked that question, And he goes, well, I'm not saying I can give it to you. He goes, I just want to know, I was like, well, all right. And we just kind of hashed it out. And, I remember one of the first things I told him, I said, well, man, just on a basic level, the idea of walking into a building that's full of people, and if all the doors are open and I walk by and go, yeah, they're awesome. Yes, that's awesome. Yes, I love them. I said, that fires me up, And so he and I just kind of concocted this scheme for me to come over and join. And really the kind of the final bit of the final key of the puzzle for me was when he graciously was like, okay, well, what if we do a joint venture too? What if you come over at Spirit, but then what if you've got a joint venture and you can sign some writers and you can take ownership in that part of it too? And that was when it really started to feel like, okay, this makes sense. Like this, because if I'm going to be taking time away from sessions and taking time away from production and what does it really look like? And as much as I, love Frank and believe in songs and this kind of stuff, I do need to just make sure it's not a lateral move for me, or that I'm not making a move in the wrong direction. And that was really a big part of it for me, where I said, okay, well, this works, because now I can help Spirit. I can be involved there. Frank and I can team up in this. But then, kind of as an aside, I also have this thing that I can take some ownership in, So, we kind of presented, he presented it to the Spirit's an international company. He presented it to the guys that run that, John Singer, Joe Brino, Rack, Sangvi. And they were in. They said, man, Frank, we you know, we're hiring you to make moves, and this is a move. So, you know, we'll ride this with you, you know, and we just, you know, I hit it off with all those guys on a personal level. And so we began that relationship, you know, and that was, you know, we kind of started that negotiation back in the spring, but I think my official start date at Spirit was like June 2nd. So I'm just over 6 months into that whole thing there. So.
Still overwhelmed? Are you figuring it out?
I'm turning a corner, yeah. You know?
So when talking about that, you have a really unique perspective, I think, because, you know, again, I've done publishing for a long time, but the one thing I don't have and bring to the table is that incredible vast knowledge and connection you have of actually being in the studio. Of actually working directly with a lot of artists in that room, even not as a producer, just sitting there and hearing where their head's at and what they're doing. And and as we know, our business is very informational driven, especially for writers wanting to write hits. The more sometimes you got to write from the heart and just whatever happens in the room, but the more knowledge you can have to help them guide them is amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously you have a wealth of knowledge.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing I tell everybody is, you know, and I definitely had some of those conversations, particularly with some of our younger staff. It was, you know, you can tell they're kind of looking at you going, okay, tell us how to do this now. You know, what, how do we get a song to Luke Bryan, you know, or whatever. And it's like, well, okay. I mean, you know, for all of us, you know, the getting it to them is less than half the battle. You know, at this point, you know, if you've got some senior people at a publisher, you get the contacts, you can get the song to them, probably, you know, at least to within a degree of them.
Especially currently, man, everybody's pretty open, and most of the time you have somebody's email that matters.
That's so right.
You
that's
can
right.
Get
that's
it to
right.
Yeah. Get it in the door.
Yeah, and for me, it's really about like, it's all just hedging bets, right? Because, you know, the reality is music is subjective, right? It's, and man. Someone could just be in a not great mood that day. And if they hear the song, you know, the stars have to align of like the song at the time with the opportunity. You know, it's you kind of, the perfect scenario is it's like, well, this artist happens to be looking and you get it to the right person when good things are happening and they get excited about it for whatever, you know, for one of any of 100 reasons. And it kind of makes it through. That being said, you know, you could pitch the perfect song in the perfect form to the perfect person, and the things being the way they are, it just doesn't go over well that day. But you've probably all had this, you know, it's like there's a story I always tell about being on a session one day when for a big artist, it was when one of the awards nominations were revealed, and that artist who would typically be in a lot of stuff was nominated for zero. And let me tell you, that session was not awesome, okay? And that can, you know, if you were the person that pitched them the song of the year on that day, I guarantee you it ain't getting cut, you know?
Well, you probably watch more dreams get crushed of the, as publishers, you get in there, we're going to cut your song, and somebody slides in that last minute too, they just bumped your song off, and you're like, really?
It's happened to my friends. You know, I mean, I've had to, you know, early on.
They're always texting you, aren't they? Hey,
always.
Man, what are they cutting on the session, dude?
And a lot of the publishers, too. I mean, and that was, and, you know, early on, I had no problem sharing that information. You know, I was always happy for my friends at, you know, publishers and, you know, people at Universal, like, hey, could you let me know if you guys cut this song today on so and so? You know, and yeah, happily, you know, and then, but, you know, I got burned a couple times telling people like, well, yeah, man, I charted it. I think we're cutting it this afternoon. And somehow after lunch, that song was not being recorded again. And then you got to call them back and they're like, oh, well, we're at Rebar having drinks right now. Yeah. Sorry, man. It turned on me, you know, so after, you know, I did that for a little while and now I've kind of just backed off. I kind of just try to not, you know, pump anybody up. Cause I've also had this instance where we cut the song, but then ultimately they get off of it for whatever reason and it doesn't even get finished out and then ultimately doesn't make the project. And that's another thing too that happens, you know. So
I've been on all sides of every way I can lose a cut.
Absolutely, man. I would say until it's in plastic, don't count it, you know.
So backing up a hair, as your role and given what you have, and I know you know understand fully the well, on a creative level, you understand what publishing is. Because again, like you said, I know you're around people like myself and you befriend the thing. Yeah. How do you see, because you have a unique company over there now, but as yourself, what do you see the value of it when you bring a writer on board? Mm-hmm. How do you see mentoring them and helping them out along in their journey?
Yeah, well, again, I kind of circle back to the hedging of the bets thing. Is it's like, I think a lot of the right things can be relatively obvious, you know? You ever seen that thing that's like a, you know, it's that list of like things that don't take talent, right? Showing up on time, treating people good, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? But I think there's a lot of things that people do that they don't realize kind of put them outside of the strike zone sometimes, you know? And I don't mean that necessarily in a song of like, well, if you say this, they're not going to cut that, or blah, 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 you know? But there are some ways to kind of hedge bets and particularly too, even demos of songs, right? With writer producers, I think there are certainly cases where a demo is overproduced sometimes, right? And that can help, but sometimes it can hinder too. And the bottom line too is they maybe spent time working on that demo and it's overproduced and they could have just been writing another song that day, you know? And there's a fine line in that. It's also a moving target because it's different for, you know, if it's going to this artist, we might lean a little bit overproduced. If it's going for this person, I don't think that's quite as big of a deal. It's going to get through. And even if they cut this, they're not going to cut it in this style anyway. I think the core of the song is. So for me, for new writers that we're signing, if they're young and, you know, if I can bestow any knowledge on them, it's going to be in those kinds of things. It's essentially the, for me, it's the baby bumpers philosophy at the bowling alley. It's just like, okay, it's going to take a while for you to get throwing strikes consistently. So what I'm going to do in the meantime is just keep you out of the gutters.
Oh, that's great.
Right.
You've played on so many demos, so you know what hit songs sound like. There's an intrinsic knowledge there, but also you will know what doesn't work. I tell my writers, yes, if I can offer anything, and I like to say, we are looking at this through the lens of trying to get something through to make it corporate radio compliant. So I'm not trying to judge your art, but if you want that fine target, here's a bunch of things not to do.
Like, absolutely.
And there's just little things that you walk through that kind of help keep them online.
That's right. You're just keeping them out of the gutters, man, with that kind of stuff.
Somebody listening may be going, well, what are those? And that's kind of a fluid thing, really. There's
completely.
Not like I couldn't just sit here in the microphone and list them off. It's when you hear the song, you go, ah, man, you might not, let's fix that or change that.
Yeah, completely. You know. And then you get into the real minutia of, and the kind of the relational part of it where you go like, hey, this song is awesome. If you're thinking about it for Blake Shelton, he will not say that. Like this line, he will not say. I've been in things, like he's not going to say this. So you're going to have to change it. Or, yeah, you want the so-and-so to do this. Like, they're not going to say a girl's name. It's not their wife.
Right.
So you're going to have to, I mean, and that gets into some of the real, real nitty-gritty of the inside. You know, Kenny Chesney hates slide guitar. He hates it so much. He wouldn't let Joe Walsh play slide on his record. You know, it's that kind of stuff. And
hilarious.
I mean, that's super inside, but, you know, that's the really zoomed in kind of stuff. But if you zoom out, there's a lot of easier, a little more universal stuff like that where you can just say, yeah, look, I'm not trying to talk about your art, but if you're looking for this, you know, at least get the right ball.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the AIMP Nashville Pubcast. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform and follow us at AIMP Nashville to keep up with news, events, panels, and even new episodes. The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is created by executive producers Del Bobo and Tim Hunsey, producer Brandon Harrington, mixing and editing by Casey Porter. Thanks for listening and supporting the AIMP Nashville Pubcast.